Hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by me. We are solo podcasting and we're going to touch in on a few different places today. This is my first podcast since the 2024 presidential election. I'm making quote marks with my fingers because I'm not sure. I'm just not sure like what's theater, what's real. I think that's one of the biggest, for me, like confusing riddles of the 21st century is what is real? How many of the things that, you know, the news cycles are thrusting at us are real? So I'm going to touch in on a little bit of the backlash around that before I dive into today's show. I am reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to send this show to at least three friends, because the more, the merriest. It's always so fun to expand the tribe. I'm also inviting you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the best way to ensure that we stay in touch. It's the best way that you can stay apprised of my every next book drop, webinar, course, live event. All of these things are coming up in the near, a little bit less near future. So please stay in touch by way of dannykatz.com. I don't send out a ton of newsletters. I actually tend towards the, I would say, too minimalist when it comes to that. I don't want to judge myself. For me, it's just that if you're like me, my inbox is stuffed, and I did just do a big unsubscribe, and even the newsletters that I want to subscribe to, it's rare that I open them. I look forward to having more bandwidth, more time, which is why I'm doing this dopamine detox course. I think I mentioned that on the last podcast. It's called Ritual Reboot by Nathaniel Salas. I'm not an affiliate. I get no bonuses in mentioning it, and I'm really enjoying it and getting a lot of value in it. So I am just sharing what's working for me. So we have a few things to talk about today, and I want to address before I dive into it, we will be going into the language of betterarchy. We will be going into some languaging upgrades, and I know that there are people who are new to finding me. I have been sharing content, writing articles, doing cultural criticism for a really long time. No need to delve into the fiction of linear time. And let's say since the early 2000s, my start in all of this was as a journalist. So I sometimes get feedback, mostly from men. I don't want to make this a gender thing. It's really only from men. It's really only from boomer men who reach out to tell me how I should be podcasting and what my content should be and what they don't like. And it's all fair game. I welcome the feedback. And I know there are some people who are confused as to, like, why is she talking about culture? Why is she talking about politics? Why isn't she just talking about language all day, every day? The reason is that journalism was my first love. Journalism is where I got my start with all this word nerdery. I always wanted to be an investigative journalist ever since seeing broadcast news, ever since discovering Hunter S. Thompson. And the languaging stuff came upon it. Basically, the language chose me, and it tapped me, and language said, hey, you're doing this for me. And it's been an ongoing negotiation between us. And as I am relinquishing more and more of the political theatrics and nonsense, there is still my genuine love and passion for cultural critique, for doing what I can to help shape the public discourse. And whereas I used to have so many outlets for that by way of LA Weekly, Whole Life Times, LA Yoga, Reality Sandwich, Vice, the publications for which I used to write, it was part of the reason why I created this podcast, because, you know, part of my whole thing and part of what I guide other people to do is create our own lives the way we want to. And so I like talking about those things. And so if you are one of those people who doesn't like hearing me talk about those things, I'm probably not going to get into the languaging stuff until the second half of this conversation. So if you want to fast forward, respect, free will rocks, and we're going to dive into it. So in the ongoing reporting from the front lines of the censorship industrial complex, I just wanted to report that I've got a new limitation around YouTube, which is that I can't get on YouTube. I think they're blocking my IP address. And this really ties into the two kind of my political commentary today. There's no point harping on the problem. I'm over it. It's why I don't post on YouTube anymore, minus short trailers, is I don't really want to waste my earth walk fighting with big tech gatekeepers. Like, it's not fun. There's no point harping on the problem. For me, it's just like, what's the solution? The solution is I want to get onto YouTube, so I'm using a VPN. Great, no problem. And because there are so many people who continue to think that we have freedom of speech, continue to think that censorship isn't a problem, and it's weird to me how many journalists are in this camp, I just wanted to report from the front lines of my own experience. I've got a whole new situation happening over at YouTube. If you're having that as well, let me know. I'm sure I'm not the only one, but I haven't yet connected with anyone who's also having this issue. And it's not an issue. I found the solution. Before we get into the post-election stuff, which I feel like I would be remiss in not addressing, acknowledging, given how loud and relevant and timely it is, I do want to talk about how much I'm enjoying peaceful disagreeing right now. I've recently reconnected with some friends from back in LA who are of extremely different worldviews and perspectives, right? These are people who are aware and who are active, and because they're getting their news and information from different sources, we have completely different ideas. And I'm so loving, it feels so old school and so retro, having peaceful different disagreements with friends and talking about issues upon which we have such different ideas with respect and courtesy and calm nervous systems. And I'm actually enjoying it more so right now than having conversations with people who agree with me because it's restoring my faith in humanity. It is expanding my perspective because I don't claim to know everything about everything. And I love that it's not affecting the friendships. That being said, one of these examples that I'm thinking of in my mind took a little bit of a different turn today. So one of these friends with whom I've been exchanging ideas, he reached out to me. We probably haven't spoken in about a year about the whole Israel-Gaza situation. And he sent me a video, which I took the time to watch. And it was, I mean, the details are irrelevant, but basically it was a explaining, it was like people within Israel explaining their perspective and kind of doubling down on the actions that they're taking there. Again, I don't really want to get into the specifics of it because it's not my circus, not my monkey. I don't really feel very invested in that, even though my family does originally hail from Israel. But I don't feel those like tribal allegiances, and I don't think that's a good thing, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's just a thing, and it's just my way. So my friend sent me this video, and I took the time to watch it, and I responded saying like, "Thank you for sending me this and catching me up to speed and helping fill out the conversation. I remain Israel neutral because I've never been there, and I haven't done enough research." It doesn't like with that particular issue, it feels so opaque and confusing and tied into so many knots. I mean, clearly Max Blumenthal is doing it, and I respect him, Abby Martin. But again, it's like I'm just giving my blind trust to other people's research, which is part of this like whole, hysterical divide that we're living through right now. And on that issue specifically, because it's so programmed, it feels so toxic, people get so emotional, I just pull out. I don't feel particularly interested in it. Emily and I talk about it in terms of policy on our show, and I'm not gonna bore you guys with this on my show. But my only interest in that conversation is like, why is America involved, right? And I'm just gonna leave it at that. There are more details around it, but that's not really my point. But I just let him know, like, I haven't done enough research into this. I don't feel educated enough to really have opinion, to have a perspective on it. And so I appreciate, your efforts to fill it in for me, and I'm going to continue to stay neutral and focus on what's happening here in the United States. The issues that align with my core values, with my priorities, of course, are freedom of speech and censorship. Of course, the social engineering going on around the weaponization of customer service, normalizing techno-fascism, communism, division, tyranny, et cetera, and of course, medical freedom. And so my friend, still respectfully, still with compassion, but is like, silence is violence. These are his responses. Silence is violence. And you n neutrality doesn't work. You have to take a side. And I was like, it's very out of character for this friend of mine. And he's Jewish. And a lot of Jewish people will step out of what I see and know as their character around this particular issue because of, tribal identity politics, tribal identity associations and programming and all of that. And again, no judgment. There's no wrong way to do one's earth walk. But the other thing that he was saying was like, we need to instill Western values and democracy in the Middle East. And I was saying, you know what? I respect and honor that that is your opinion. And as my friend, like I honor your right to have that opinion, but personally, that feels super arrogant, and I don't feel like it's my place to impose my country's values or culture on another culture or country. Like, for me personally, that feels arrogant, and that doesn't feel aligned. And I also feel like, according to Spiral Dynamics, people are at their level of consciousness authentically. And so to impose a higher level of consciousness upon someone who's not authentically there feels like a recipe for disaster, right? We see this happening, I've said this before, in the conversations around racism and sexism. If someone is authentically sexist, if someone authentically feels like women are a lesser gender, then that's where they're at. And to impose rules upon them that don't allow them to authentically express that, I'm not saying exert behavior that imposes on other people's free will or to exert violence, right? But if that's someone's belief, they're allowed to have that belief. If someone is racist or sexist, I want them to be able to speak freely about that so that I know and I can adjust. I can erect the appropriate boundaries for that. But to decide racism and sexism are illegal, okay, well, what are you going to do about the people who are authentically there? It's like I've talked about Jordan Peterson, who seems, in my perspective, to be operating at a very high level, blue spiral dynamics consciousness. So that's all about hierarchy, rules, religion, traditional social structures like marriage. Religion, he's not going to be an entrepreneur working for himself. He's going to work in established academia and work his way up the ranks, right? He's operating from that point of view. So we can't thrust or impose a second tier consciousness onto Jordan Peterson. That's going to create conflict with his authentic worldview. So again, just my perspective. I feel like it's completely out of line to impose Western values and democracy on other countries and cultures, especially given that they've been here longer. Like, I just don't think it's any of our business to be the boss of the whole world, which is why I'm not a globalist. But when I shared this perspective with my friend, he doubled down on like, no, you have to pick a side, and your neutrality is violence. And it was like, I don't have to pick a side. Like, who are you to impose your intolerance or your worldview upon me? Like, where is the honoring of free will in that? I'm not imposing my perspectives about medical freedom and freedom of speech upon you. I'm not giving anyone else a hard time for not making those their priority number one issues. So why do you need me to make this my number one issue? And it's also interesting because, I mean, I would say this morning he's probably sent me at least half an hour of voice memos on it. And I appreciate it from like, a loving friendship connection point of view. But it's also like, why do you care what I think? Like, how is it going to change at anything? Like, I see this happening here in Santa Fe where there are still protests happening on our, main plaza in the center of town around the Palestine situation. And it's like, what do you think that's going to do? Like, what change do you think your outrage or your opinions are going to translate into? And what does this have to do with what's happening in Santa Fe? And again, I don't need to repeat my perspectives on Israel. I've talked about this on my show with Emily, and I've probably already talked about it here. But it's interesting to see people imposing their not just their worldview on others and needing others to embrace that same worldview, to prioritize the same issues, but this leap in translation and meaning making that silence equals violence. It's like, no, silence just equals silence, right? And I see this. We're going to kind of jump around these cultural issues before we get into the languaging stuff, but I see this in terms of what just happened with the election. And I'm going to hydrate. Where people's interpreting other people's voting choices through the lens of sexism, racism, hatred, and division, and not realizing that it's their own internal, unacknowledged sexism, racism, division, and bigotry that is being projected onto others. Now, are we going to see this healed in our lifetimes? I don't know. Like, obviously, I'm working in as committed way as possible to help people wake up to their own programming and to the blind spots and erroneous beliefs that they're projecting onto the external world. But again, going back to spiral dynamics, whether that's, a system that resonates with you or not, it certainly resonates with me. People are at where they're at. But what I notice is like these giant leaps of like reality is neutral. And my friend was really taking issue with my neutrality. And it's like, I don't know enough about it to take a side. And being Jewish for me isn't enough reason to take a side. Like, I don't understand. I really don't understand the situation at all. But like, what I've noticed happening are the people who are vying for Harris to win. And I want to be clear, I opted out of this. I don't live in a swing state. I live in a state that is dominated by, well, not dominated, but we're under Dominion voting machine tyranny here. So I hold zero hope for any sort of fair electoral process here in New Mexico. So I opted out. So I didn't really have a dog in this one. But what I've noticed is the people who were voting for Harris, when it was announced that Trump won, decided that the reason that people voted for Trump was either because they're racist, they're sexist, or because Elon Musk made them do it, or because Joe Rogan made them do it, or because they're Republican boyfriends made them do it. And this is going to move us into the languaging section today, because we're going to be focusing on victimization and blame, which is, you know, these are the dominant energetics that I'm watching shape the current conversation. And I don't really think we could call it a conversation right now. I'm recording this on, what is the date? The 13th. I'm recording this on November 13th, 14th, excuse me. So in watching the hysteria and the sort of tantrums being thrown, it's people who are either making up excuses in their own mind to rationalize other people's behaviors, or simply parroting, you know, their pundits or influencers' rationalizations and then projecting them. And either they're realizing or they're not realizing that these projections are really damning and demonizing and divisive in terms of their simply not understanding how their fellow Americans made a different choice. It's really quintessential victim languaging, victim consciousness, and also a lot of narcissism. And so the leap is, someone does something I don't like. And this is another through line that I'm noticing, and I can really relate, because the through line that I'm noticing to this whole leap of meaning making, wherein we have the people who are disappointed in other people pretending to be psychic mind readers, and then making up stories as to why these people have disappointed them, and then projecting these stories onto the people who did the disappointing, and these stories that they're projecting are painting these people who disappointed them in the worst possible light. The through line is that we're disappointed, right? And this is something that I'm in the process of mastering in my own life, in my own personal earth walk, is realizing one of the primary triggers that in the past has caused me to surrender my emotional stability, that has had me becoming dysregulated, is managing disappointment. And still learning to manage disappointment like a self-responsible, mature, emotionally mastered human being. And so, you know, what was happening with my friend in the Israel conversation is that he was disappointed that I wasn't siding with him. And instead of working with his own disappointment or whatever other emotions were being triggered in me saying, I appreciate your perspective, but I don't share your perspective, he instead tried to bully me into changing my mind. And when I say bully me, it was bullying, but it wasn't like aggressive, right? It wasn't disrespectful. It wasn't, you know, conflict laden. I'm gonna take a couple deep breaths because I'm just noticing the urge. I'm noticing like a rushed feeling in my chest. And I think I know that I'm going to enjoy today's podcast a lot more when I feel more relaxed and more slowed down. So thank you for your patience as I utilize my own tools to bring myself into a calmer state. So this is what I'm noticing happening in the left. And I'm also seeing issues with the right in the election results. And I will certainly get into those as well. But what I'm seeing in the left is basic disappointment in the election results. And instead of using our tools to handle said disappointment, even though I wasn't vying for Harris, I still want to keep this under the umbrella of our shared humanity, right? So, as much as possible, I'm going to engage this conversation from that place. So, it's A, victimization, and B, the inability to handle disappointment. And so, the tools being used in that victimization and in that inability or unwillingness to handle one's own internal disappointment. People are either making up stories in their head or embracing stories that the social engineers have made up and projecting these very negative stories onto our fellow humans. And this is something that I go into deeply in the victimhood section of the Language of Betterarchy, which we're going to be getting into today, is projection of ill intent, right? I have lost count of how many times I've heard people who identify as leftists or Democrats say that the reason that Kamala lost is because people are racist and sexist. All I can say is that's not my experience on it. That doesn't line up with my experience. And that story allows those people to victimize themselves, right? It allows them to make perpetrators out of the more than half the country who has a different perspective on things. And what I haven't seen, and I am excited to see, is more self-responsibility and self-reflection in the conversation, where those who are disappointed, instead of blaming and projecting these really yucky, low vibe stories onto their fellow Americans, they turn their gaze inward to inquire as to, like, huh, how did I get it wrong? Like, I really thought that the bulk of the country was on the same page as I am and was wanting the same things. And now it seems that I was wrong. And given that it's, a vast majority, right? Trump won by essentially a landslide. Maybe I should look inward to start questioning my perspective on things instead of projecting this gross story that everyone out there is a bigot on some level. And it had me reflecting on my time in gymnastics. Now, gymnastics is a very individualized sport. We are, it's not like basketball or soccer, where we're like tussling with other people. We're looking to perform our best, and then the judges determine like who of everyone competing did the best on each event. I won a lot of meets, I won a lot of events, and I lost a lot of meets, and I lost a lot of events, and whether I won or lost a meet, my response, like my actions after every single competition, were exactly the same. Where did I lose points and where could I do better? It didn't matter if I swept every event and won the whole meet. I would still do the exact same thing. Well, why did I get a 9.2 on my floor routine? Where did I lose the 8 points? What could I have done better, right? If we totally lost the meet, it was never like, well, those girls cheated. Well, the judges were racist. Like that never came into play, right? And I see how this perspective and being, getting this sort of training and programming from a young age, helped entrain me in this practice of looking within. But it was always, what did I do? Where could I have performed better? The same thing happens when, like, I blow a job opportunity, or I have a disagreement with a friend. Where am I contributing to this? So, I told you guys, well, no, this wasn't on this podcast, but after the election, the day that the results came out, I recorded a short video and put it out on Instagram, wherein I shared my experience when Trump won in 2016. Now, in 2016, I was still under like idealistic mind control, and so I wrote in Bernie on the ticket. So I didn't want Trump to win and I didn't want Hillary to win. I was pulling for Bernie because I was still under the Bernie mind control. When Trump won, I didn't go to the racist one, this was a fix. I reached out to a friend of mine who I knew had voted for Trump, and I invited her on a hike. And then I asked her, please break this down for me and explain to me why this is a good thing, why you voted for Trump. What policies have you feeling good about how this election went down? And then I opened myself up to her perspective, and I learned a lot, a lot. And so I put that video out the day after the election, and I got a lot of support from it because my tribe's awesome, but I also got a lot of hate for it. People saying, I'm unfollowing you. How can you support a rapist and a racist and a this and a terrorist and Hitler and this and that? And it was like, really, all I did was propose that we avail ourselves to the possibility that we don't know everything there is to know about everything, and avail ourselves to other people's opinions and perspectives, and allow those to filter in and help us expand our own worldviews. So I put that out. I haven't had anyone reach out to me to ask me my perspective. I'm Trump neutral. So I see good things, I see bad things. Again, like I'm not feeling aligned with tethering my emotional center, my optimism about our future to any external sources. That just doesn't jive with my worldview. I'm seeing a lot of people do that, and I'm a little bummed out. And I'm like, oh, are we going through this again? Like, look, this is my own disappointment. And if this is what it is, great. It's an opportunity for me to master my own frustration, with the hysteria that is indicative of the feminine shadow gone awry. I just realized gone awry sounds like gonorrhea. So I have some more thoughts on it, but I just feel inspired in this moment. We're just gonna go in and out. We're just gonna go in and out today. We're freewheeling. But because a lot of my book, The Language of Betterarchy, is talking about how the masculine shadows and the feminine shadows are shaping our society, it feels important to bring these distinctions into the conversation now. And then we'll get into some other pieces of it. So I'm going to read us from my awesome book, The Language of Betterarchy, which turned 1 year old this month, maybe last month, and is available in print, in ebook, and in audiobook, and makes a phenomenal present for everyone on your holiday gift giving list. This is from the Victimhood chapter. Here we go. Hierarchies, social engineers have gone the distance in convincing the collective that there is value in victimhood. This fallacious and ridiculous notion has people clawing, fighting, and scrambling for most marginalized status because we've been suckered into believing that disempowerment is the new black and that most oppressedest is a title worth lobbying for. The rub is that while most oppressedists might win sympathy and a certain kind of low vibe social status, the claim doesn't come along with any actual real lived value. Sure, victims are rewarded with pity, sympathy, handouts, tisks, furrowed brows, concerned coos, and all the emotional junk food upon which we binge when we're not resourced enough to know ourselves whole and empowered. But none of these external reactions translate to a robust, abundant, creative, fulfilling incarnation. Victimhood is a tiny, contracted, go-nowhere corner into which we paint ourselves, cheered on, read, enabled by friends, follows, likes, and social credit. Victimhood is the crutch that allows us to rationalize shrunken, lackluster lives while blaming excuse X or perpetrator Y for our crummy lot and our unrealized potential. So in this instance, excuse X would be people who voted for Trump are racist and misogynist. Perpetrator Y would be all these horrible bigots or Elon Musk or Joe Rogan, right? Just helping us understand and like frame what's happening now in terms of the backlash to this election through the lens of victim consciousness. Remembering that this is a program that's being run through society, through our species, that is not in our best interests. Okay. So victimhood equals the feminine shadow. That's the subheading. While we've unpacked quite a few ways in which the masculine shadow is perving our language and our society, that happens in the first half of the book, it would be disingenuous to pretend that the feminine shadow isn't also informing our current cultural clusterfuck. Victimhood is verily drenched in the feminine shadow, which surrenders its center, its dignity, its compassion, and its critical thinking capacities to the emotional hysteria and drama queen antics that so often color victim consciousness. One of the ways the feminine shadow expresses is through unchecked emotional leaks or outbursts that indicate little to no consideration for truth, propriety, professionalism, or anyone else involved. The emotional hysteria attached to victimhood cares not for time, place, or context. Rather, it will throw its hissy fits wherever it damn well pleases. Other humans be damned. Victim consciousness is reactive, blinded by its trauma and its stories, and beholden only to its hurt, to which the world is expected to kowtow. So, we're seeing this in the social media videos of people having these like insanely hysterical emotional outbursts. And a lot of what I talk about in this book is that we hear these claims for the rebalancing of the feminine and the masculine, but if the push towards rebalancing is still being dominated by masculine energetics and or by masculine shadow frequencies like conflict, violence, and separation, then all we're doing is doubling down on the imbalance, right? We're not fixing at anything. You know, one of the primary examples of this is when Hillary Clinton was running and she said, "We came, we saw, he's dead." Or I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, is that feminine leadership? You know, is that really a leader, you know, or more accurately, a public servant being animated by feminine qualities of harmony, of inclusivity, of compassion? No, that isn't. Those are masculine qualities animating a feminine being, which does not translate to a rebalancing of the masculine feminine. And so, whereas, you know, I point to a lot of the qualities, the masculine qualities that are out of balance and dominating our society, this is an aspect where we see the feminine shadow at play. And as I go into in the book, we all have masculine shadows and we all have feminine shadows, and no one is better or more gross than the other, right? They just are. We all have shadows. And we're not going to come into right relationship with the shadows unless we call them out or call them in or simply illuminate them so that we know what we're dealing with. So a lot of this hysteria that we're seeing now is a feminine shadow. And I'll give you guys an example. It's very rare that I talk to anyone in my family, but I ended up, because of some family business, reaching out to my uncle the day after the election. One of the primary reasons that my uncle and I don't talk anymore is because back in 2017 at a dinner party, when I was speaking neutrally of Trump, because I've always been Trump neutral, he was super offended. And I heard from other family members that he didn't want me around because of that. And so I called him to talk about family, the family business at hand. And he cut off the conversation about the family business at hand to go into these like hysterical worst case scenario inevitables, right? In his mind, inevitables, now that Trump was elected and how we're going to lose democracy and women are going to be locked up and all these like, again, like insane worst case scenarios. And a lot of what we're seeing now shows this like extreme break from present moment lived reality into fantasy land and imaginary problems that have been given so much emphasis in the media, in the social engineering mechanisms, that people have internalized them and are confusing reality with these projected worst case reality scenarios. And left and right both do this, Truthers do this. We all do it. We're all vulnerable to the traps of society. And I was doing my best to stay really neutral with my uncle and saying, we live in a three branch system and there are checks and balances and we'll just see how it shakes out. And he just wasn't letting it go. And I felt like I was being baited, and I also didn't feel triggered, and I didn't want to take the bait because I'm not, those are just not fun. There's no point to those conversations. And so I asked him, well, how was your life the first time Trump was president? And he goes, it was a living hell. And he was like completely dysregulated. And okay, if that's his take on reality, I knew him then, didn't seem like it was a living hell. But that hysteria, right? That's one of the markers of the feminine shadow, are these like complete out of control emotions. That aren't tethered to like logic, reason, a grounded, regulated nervous system, or in this case, reality. All right, so going back to the book. Victim consciousness defers to the feminine emotions and the sad, sorry stories manipulating them while abandoning reason and logic in the process. Were we to think of victim consciousness in terms of the scales of justice representing the masculine and feminine polarities, the feminine side would be pressing into the earth's core, weighed down with self-righteousness and woe is me vibes, while the masculine side would be floating up in the outermost edges of the atmosphere, weighed down by all of nothing, having surrendered its willpower and critical thinking skills to the feminine histrionics that typify victimhood. All right, so then we go into cancel culture, which is the masculine shadow. And a big part of this book and understanding, well, first and foremost, the language of hierarchy, and then understanding the language of betterarchy, right, which is the up level, which is the solution, which is the tool that we are using to evolve our culture out of this outdated hierarchical structure, is recognizing the frequencies of the masculine feminine, because hierarchy is itself a masculine dominant structure. Because hierarchy itself is propped up by privilege and status, and privilege and status are characteristics of the masculine. And if you're confused by what I'm talking about, A, first and foremost, read the language of betterarchy. B, I refer you to the Hermetic principle of gender and polarity, where these distinctions are laid out. But, victimhood being marked so much in so many ways, it's both by the feminine shadow, that's what we're pointing to now. So, moving into blame versus taking responsibility, right? Blame being a marker of hierarchy, taking responsibility being a marker of betterarchy. Here we go. Victimhood is a fundamentally disempowering identity to which to lay claim because it places responsibility for our lives outside of us, giving way to blame, bullying, and cancel culture as we deny our own agency and accountability for our lives. When we deny our agency and accountability, we martyr ourselves to the issue at hand, effectively abandoning our ability as reality creators to change the situation, right? This is exactly what I was talking about. When I started our podcast today with the YouTube situation, it's like, okay, YouTube can do whatever they want. They can block me from getting on their site, and I can take responsibility and decide to be resourceful and find a solution, or I could sit here and whine and bitch and stay in the frequency of the problem. But why would I want to do that? That's just not fun. When we are operating in the frequency band of victimhood and something unpleasant or uncomfortable happens, we leap to blame, immediately seeking an external agent upon whom we can pin the responsibility for our misfortune, hurt feelings, or inconvenience. Victim consciousness is perpetually focused outside of itself, ever and always looking for another scapegoat upon which it can project responsibility for its triggers, discomfort, and contractions. And in this conversation, we can also include disappointment. Empowered, betterarchical, badass consciousness, on the other hand, seeks inward when experiencing something unpleasant. Empowered, betterarchical, badass consciousness, the polar opposite of the victim variety, takes responsibility and scours the situation for clues as to where we ourselves are accountable and where we can shift, pivot, or adjust to avoid similar outcomes in the future. The beauty of taking responsibility is that when we acknowledge that we are 100% accountable for our experience of reality, then we are resourced to change reality for the better. And so, applying this to the current post-election dramatics, I feel like were I being contracted to consult with the Dems or with the Democratic operatives or identitarians or whatever it may be, this would be my A number one advice is look inward. Take responsibility for maybe this wasn't the best candidate for us to choose. Perhaps the whole situation, with pushing out Biden and not having a real primary, left a bad taste in people's mouths. Perhaps the state of the economy, the state of the border, the state of issue X, Y, Z, had the American people wanting to make a different choice, right? It's just that self-reflection is where our power lies to make actual change. And I'm excited for us to do that as a collective. Now, again, just to be fair, on the side of those who voted for Trump, I keep going back to the Kendrick Lamar song, Bitch Be Humble, Bitch Sit Down. Have some dignity in the win. I get that you're excited and celebrating, and I think that's wonderful. And I'm happy for the people who are happy and celebratory and got what they wanted. And rubbing it in the faces of those who didn't is not helping the situation, right? It's not helping us forge unity. And guys, there is no way around it. There is no way around it. For us to transcend the current divide, for us to transcend so many of the potential threats and dangers that seem to be coming down the pipeline, or at least are threatening to come down the pipeline, left, right, center, whatnot, it is inviting us to come together as Americans. And so, in the same way that I'm inviting those identified with the left and the Dems to look inward and take responsibility instead of making up excuses and projecting these horrible stories onto their fellow Americans who made a different choice, I'm also inviting those who are thrilled with this choice, to handle themselves with dignity and compassion and not go rubbing it in the faces of those who are disappointed. What's popping to mind now is Eddie Murphy's Raw, You don't got no ice cream, his mama is on the welfare, and then the ice cream falls and everyone loses, It's just like that. So I just wanted to kind of even it out and offer my two cents. The other thing that I think is weird is this new movement that I see popping up. Where women who are disappointed in the election results are now swearing off sex. And they have decided, because they're going punitive with this, right? I'm disappointed. I didn't get what I want. So I need to punish someone outside of me. And in this case, once again, they're going to punish men. I don't understand the logic that has them thinking that this is men's fault. fault. I mean, I guess it goes down to like, oh, a woman. I mean, it's just that gender. They're trying to make it a gender thing. And I will say, and I said this on Robert Phoenix's podcast, if you haven't seen it, I don't want it on his Friday Fargcast, the Friday after the election. But not every woman is going to vote for a woman just because she also has a vagina. Like, some of us are more interested in policies, strength of character, who engenders confidence in the ability to keep America safe and thriving, all of those things. But so, for whatever reasons, again, I'm not going to make that leap. It doesn't make sense to me, but we have all these women who've decided, well, I'm not going to have sex for the next 4 years to punish men. What I don't understand about this is it lends the impression that women don't like sex. I don't really get that. And I hear this a lot in I hear this a lot in the relational space, which is so confusing to me. Like, where women will weaponize sex or will reward men with certain sexual acts. It's so common and it's just very confusing to me. If you're listening to this or watching this, I'd love if you could weigh in and help explain this to me, but like, don't women like sex as much as men? Like, I get that women aren't wired to have as much sex as men, and I understand the biological, like evolutionary reasons for that. But it seems weird to me that we have these women who are going to punish themselves by taking sex off the table, especially when men, most men, well, I don't even want to say most men, a lot of men are kind of like variety is the spice of life and like let's spread our seed as in as many places as possible. Like, I don't really see this hurting men, like whatever this is, and who knows if it's gonna have legs, but I just keep hearing more and more, I keep seeing little videos about it and it confuses me. And also that desire to punish, like the desire to punish is also the masculine shadow. So if we're going to genderize this election, which to me seems stupid, like, I don't care if a woman is in power. I want the most qualified person to be in power. And if that person happens to be a woman, that's great, but to reduce the conversation to just that, I mean, you guys are listening to my podcast, so I'm guessing we're on the same page. It's just so reductive and short-sighted and like silly and stupid and petty. That does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you're inspired to continue listening, you can find the second half over on both my Patreon and Locals communities. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. At both communities, for as little as $5 a month, you will get access to all of my second half conversations. Plus oodles of bonus content. As you are interested in tuning in to my words podcast that I do with Emily Moyer, that is available for my $10 and higher supporters on both of those platforms. Just wanted to give you a full lay of the land so you can choose to support me at whatever level or tier feels best for you. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter, to check out my courses, webinars on dannycats.com, my Yes I Am transformational coloring book for kiddos, grown-ups, and everyone in between is almost ready. I am hoping, fingers crossed, that by the time this podcast drops, it will be available for immediate purchase on Amazon.com. If you sign up for my newsletter, you will be certainly kept in the loop on that one. Yes, I Am makes a phenomenal gift for anyone on your holiday gift giving list. It is 444 pages of encouragement, inspiration, confidence building, emotional intelligence building content. It's extra very colorable now, and I promise you'll love it. So you can nab many, many copies through Amazon. If you are not aligned with purchasing from Amazon, respect, feel free to DM me to arrange for private sale. And that does it. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are Omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.